District of being development and implementation of Department of Defense policy governing weapon systems and equipment testing. Also, my gentleman, my guest this evening, served as a special assistant for defense, space, science, and technology to then Congressman Ken Kramer, who served 83 through 1985, and a ranking member of the House Committee on Armed Services. Earlier in 1981 through 1983, he served Congressman Jack Kemp as a senior staff member on the House Republican Conference, directing legislative research and analysis support for all the Republican members of the House. In 1989 through 1992, my guest served as a senior strategic planner with BDM International, which led the contractor team providing comprehensive planning and technical support for the development of the DOE, or Department of Energy's, nuclear weapons complex, environmental restoration, and waste management. And a cum laude graduate of San Jose State University in philosophy and political science, my guest also served in the reserve components of the United States Marine Corps and the Air Force. And from 1966 through 1972, he was a member of the Central Intelligence Agency. My guest this evening, ladies and gentlemen, is Mr. Carl Flock. And Carl, welcome to the program, and reading your list of accomplishments and background practically took up the first 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Don, who was that guy?
Carl, with a background like that, and especially having been a part of several administrations, it would seem almost unbelievable that you would have such a public and visible part of a phenomenon that most people, let's say most straight people, do not even give credence to.
Well, you know, Don, I think that is something of a misperception. It's surprising to me. Maybe it's a misperception that I still harbor myself, because I still feel, oh, gee, it's kind of a peculiar subject. But it's amazing to me when you talk with people, they don't look at you like you're some kind of a wacko with a propeller beanie. They take it serious. I think that, generally speaking, people consider it to be a subject that is worthy of being taken seriously. I never found, either in official circles or amongst my friends and neighbors or folks I run into on airplanes and so forth, anything but a serious consideration of the subject.
Well, there are...
a wry smile, you know.
Well, sure. There are many serious people involved in the field of UFOs, Carl. And then again, we certainly have to point out, and as a matter of fact, in a number of shows in the last several months, I've pointed out specifically at people we do not consider to be either serious or real. However, when we take a look at entities, governmental entities, for example, the United States Air Force, they will not even speak to a citizen about unidentified flying objects. However, UFOs seem to be as prevalent today as they were 30 years ago, maybe more so.
Well, certainly the interest continues, and maybe the broad range or base of interest is greater than it used to be. My sense is that the general level of activity, or at least reported activity, is not as great. I know in talking about this with my colleagues, folks at QFOS in Chicago and people that I'm acquainted with in MUFON and at the Fund for UFO Research, the general level of reported activity is pretty low. The singular exception, it seems, that maybe this is a small exaggeration, but the principal exception seems to be the so-called abduction phenomenon. But as far as what those of us who grew up in the heady days of the 50s and 60s goes, the traditional, the flying saucer, that kind of activity is not very high anymore. Or at least again, I emphasize reported activity.
Well, now, you know, if we take a look, Carl, in the last 10 years, in this country, there have been a number of areas that have been literally swamped with reports and with objects.
Uh-huh.
I'm speaking specifically going back to about 1983, 1984 in the Hudson Valley area of New York.
True.
In the Wytheville, Virginia area, which was reported on extensively by news journalist Danny Gordon.
Right.
Fife, Alabama a few years ago, and as a matter of fact, today down in the Alabama area with all the reported examples of cattle mutilations.
Yeah, there are hot spots. That's certainly true. And
that's not even touching the reports still coming out of the former Soviet Union.
Yes, yes. Well, of course, a lot of what's coming out of the former Soviet Union is historical information, at least to the extent that I know anything about it. I haven't, quite honestly, to be perfectly frank, I have not paid that close attention to it. I've been more than just a little bit absorbed in the Roswell case.
Well, now, Roswell is certainly another kettle of fish, Carl. The Roswell crash, as I'm sure the majority of the listening audience of this program knows, took place 46 years ago. As a matter of fact, just a little over 46 years and a couple of days.
That's right.
And today, that particular incident is still as pretty much as sneered at as it has ever been, especially in light of the fact that some of the best books, you know, on anything having to do with ufology have come from that incident. There have been over 400 witnesses that have been interviewed first and second hand by people like Kevin Randall, Donald Schmidt, William Moore, Charlie Berlitz, when they wrote their book, and still not a word from the government.
Don Berliner, Stan Friedman, and yours truly.
Exactly. I'm sorry, Carl, could you speak up a little?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. There has been nothing officially out that has been stated by the government on the case, other than to say that nothing happened. That's true. It is nonetheless an incredibly well substantiated, well investigated case. Well, let me just tell you what my conclusion is at this point. I should say conclusions of where I am on it. I believe that something extremely unusual was recovered, and that at least in the immediate time frame of the event itself and for some time thereafter, the true nature of what was recovered was covered up. Beyond that, I'm not willing to go, even with the vast number of people that I have already interviewed and the substantial body of documentary evidence that I've pulled together. There are other folks who will go further than that and say, oh, we believe very definitely that what we have here is the crash of an alien spacecraft. I think we've got a lot of evidence and information pointing to that. I don't think we have anything yet that is conclusive, which is why a number of us are making a concerted effort to get some official action on the matter, principally on Capitol Hill, and now with a parallel effort being considered in the court.
All right, Carl, let's discuss that some more. I've got to take a very quick commercial break, and when I come back, that's something that I want to go into in some depth,
right.
And that is the stance of our elected officials and some of the bureaucrats within the government. We'll be back in just a moment. And we are back. My Lord, I didn't know I was so long-winded. Okay, my guest this evening is Carl Flock, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, a former member of the Central Intelligence Agency, and an individual very active not only in UFO research, but in what is probably one of the most mysterious events in over the last 50 years of UFO history. Carl, you as a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, I'm sure would have had to have spoken about your interest to other people within government. Now, it's pretty much a given among most people in the UFO field and most citizens that think that the government considers this to be bogus. Is that actually how people look at this? We've all heard rumors about George Bush having stated off the cuff and off the record that this was something that most people wouldn't even believe. I mean, what's the real story about government? Can you even say?
Well, I can tell you quite honestly and truthfully that in all my time in government service in one capacity or another, either on the Hill or in the Pentagon or in CIA, I never once personally encountered anything that indicated any official interest. Now, I'm talking about in my own official capacity. Obviously, I, like everyone else who has any interest in this subject, is well aware that there has been official interest ebbing and flowing over the years. But I personally never had any contact or never encountered any official interest anywhere.
Never?
Never.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, Carl, speaking about your time that you spent with Central Intelligence, I had on the program Richard Hall.
Oh, yes.
Who was a former assistant secretary and assistant director of NICAP.
Sure, I know Dick very well.
Okay. Toward the end of that program, there had been rumors circulating for years that NICAP had been infiltrated. There
yes.
had been rumors that Don Kehoe had been driven out, and then basically that NICAP was driven into the ground. I asked Hall very bluntly, I said, Dick, is there any credence to these rumors? The upshot of it was, he said, yes, I believe that NICAP was infiltrated and destroyed. How do you answer that?
I don't have any knowledge personally that there was anything of the sort going on. There are certainly evidence that there were people who had official connections with the agency associated with NICAP.
And that would even include you?
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely. Although I'm talking about other people who were in more highly placed positions, about whom there have been allegations made
mm-hmm.
concerning their role with respect to NICAP. In my case, not to bore everybody, but in my case, I joined NICAP when I was a college student, 63 or 64, thereabouts.
All right.
And then I was recruited by the agency in 66, came to Washington, and realizing that of course, NICAP's headquarters was just down the street, effectively, it was a great opportunity for me, a guy who has been interested in the subject, you know, ever since he was a knee-high to an alien. Here's a chance for me to actually participate and help out.
Well, you would have, of course, had to have told your employers about outside interest, including NICAP.
Oh, exactly. Well, you see, when you I'm sure, Don, you've had experience with this, with security clearances and all that. You fill out 50 bazillion forms with all your affiliations and associations and backgrounds. But in this case, I was simply a member receiving the UFO investigator and contributing to the cause. I was not actively engaged in doing anything with NICAP, and so when I decided I wanted to do something like that, there was a call put out to people who lived in the area to help out on weekends or when they had spare time with filing and the other necessary business of running the operation. I wanted to volunteer for that, but I had to get that okayed before I could actually do that. And I thought when I did it, I said, gee, this will be interesting, because if I do this and they really are interested, maybe I'll find something out with reference to that interest. It was a strictly ho-hum, routine, fill-the-square exercise.
And nobody even raised one eyebrow?
Not in my presence, anyway.
and there was never, during the course of the time that you were at NICAP, they never asked, even in an offhand manner, what's going on?
No, not a peep, not a word, not a question.
Later on, when NICAP, in fact, went down the tubes, now, you live back in the very hub, practically, of the universe, at least as we know it here on planet Earth, and that's right in the Washington, D.C. area where it all happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that over the years, at least in your own mind, you would have had to have asked yourself what actually happened to NICAP. I mean, they were truly, in my opinion, one of the best ever.
I don't think there's any question about that. And
didn't you ever even have any questions in your own mind that somebody may have targeted them?
Well, yes and no. It was I have to say that I attributed most of NICAP's difficulty to what transpired in terms of public interest after the publication of the Condon Committee report in 1959.
Well, Carl, even with the Condon report, I mean, anybody that even took 10 minutes to look at that would have realized that it was not what was being projected in the media. Over 30% of all those cases that Conan even looked at
were
unexplained. Not to mention...
It was my distinct impression when I first read the Condon report, and believe me, I'm probably one of the few people in the world who's read the whole bloody thing, not just the executive summary. My first impression was that Condon wrote the executive summary before he ever looked at what was behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
And he was on the record as having poo-pooed the whole thing before he even started the project.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, that was kind of... It was reported in the press as, here's the answer, the Air Force folded up Blue Book. All the steam went out of NICAP's effort.
Unfortunately, nobody ever gave the word to the saucers.
Well, exactly. Precisely. The phenomena didn't go away.
All right, my guest this evening, this is UFOs Tonight. My name is Don Ecker. My guest is Mr. Carl Flock, a former member of Central Intelligence, a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, and an all-around UFO investigator. If you'd like to speak to myself or my guest, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. Okay, now, we've talked very briefly about Roswell, and I really don't know, Carl, if you were able to express fully what has been going on. What is the prognosis for a sincere and legitimate and not stacked deck congressional hearing or investigation?
I'd say it's very well, the investigation is underway as we speak. It's more properly tagged an inquiry at this point. We have two members of the House of Representatives who have taken a very active interest in the matter, both because of personal interest and because of inquiries from constituents requesting that they do something about it. I have been asked informally to assist one of those offices in providing information to them to support that inquiry. I've been working with Fred Whiting of the Fund for UFO Research to provide this information, provide as much information as possible to support it. And I've been helping out with also helping the other congressional office. We are working in cooperation with the other Roswell investigators to bring as much information to bear as possible to support that. I think that there's no question about the sincerity and the genuine desire to get some straight answers on the part of these two congressmen.
Okay.
And they are pursuing it quite vigorously. One of them has demanded a personal briefing. He's gone directly to the Secretary of Defense. Demanded a personal briefing from whoever the Secretary thinks is appropriate to send over, as well as a written report.
Okay, that's very good, because that brings up an entire slew of questions, Carl, that I want to go into. However, we are getting very close within the next couple of minutes of doing the half-hour break. I'll tell you what, let me do a couple of quick commercials, and we'll do the half-hour break, and then when we come back, maybe we can get in about 15 or 20 minutes of straight shooting before we have to take another one.
Okay, fine. Well, that's a good question, and that's certainly a question that I and others who have been investigating this event have been asking. There are, of course, a number of possibilities. It has been suggested that one of the most likely possibilities was the Sandia base near Albuquerque.
Okay.
Because of the security there, because of the qualifications of the scientific and technical personnel there, it would have been a logical, and because of its proximity to where the craft would have been recovered, it would have been a logical place to go.
So you think the possibility of it having gone to Wright Pat is a smokescreen?
No, I would say that Wright Field or Wright Patterson is also another possibility. Those are I think probably the two most likely bets.
Okay, now let's stop for a second and let's take a look at something else. And this is something that nobody inside or outside of government wants to either admit to or talk about. And that's an area down in Nevada, right outside of Las Vegas, and Nellis Air Force Base, which in the popular press is known as Area 51. Now, it's my understanding that since then, the proper classification is no longer Area 51. There's something else, but nobody's talking about what that is. Now, the Central Intelligence Agency, with Lockheed founder Kelly Johnson, picked the spot for this base. And I think anybody that's even done 3 minutes of research into this know that this is the place where superior, brand new, highly technological aircraft have been built, have been tested. Things like the U-2, things like the A-12, things like the SR-71. And today, even NBC correspondent Fred Francis saw something out there that he described as defying the laws of physics, acting like a flying saucer. There have been reported and numerous accounts of violations of not only civil law, but violations that would fall under an individual's civil rights that would take place on public land. Violations by armed individuals with no markings on them, purportedly working for the Department of Energy. Violations where people would come in and take individuals' photographic equipment. Helicopters chasing them off the road. I mean, these are things that have been documented. Mm-hmm. And the federal government, exactly a little over a year ago, a case like that happened out there. The federal prosecutor in Los Angeles would not even hear the case. We cannot find out who, in fact, is even in charge of this bloody base. It's said to be a part of the Nellis Range, all right? Mm-hmm. But getting a handle on who runs it is really difficult. Mm-hmm. The CIA, the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, NASA, DOE have all maintained a presence there. But yet, nobody today can find out who's in charge, who the commander of that base is, or anything about it. There is billions of dollars that are funneling in there. Nobody, Carl, but nobody has a handle on who's spending the money, what the money is being spent for. We're talking about tax dollars.
Okay, now I'm not so sure that the latter statement is true.
Oh, it is true. Believe me, and
well,
I can back it up.
Let me speak to that briefly. There are people who have the responsibility for overseeing the authorization and appropriation of funds for such activity. I'm acquainted with at least one who is a very, very powerful guy. He's one of those among the 50 most powerful unelected, you know, Hill staff person whose job it is to oversee this kind of thing, who has been concerned about just exactly the question you're talking about and who has been zeroing in on it. I don't know where things stand with that now because I'm not cleared to know about it, but he is. Now, I'm not saying he does know. What I am saying is that to say flatly that no one knows where the money is going and where it's coming from and who's spending it and who's running it, I think is overstating the case. As to who runs Area 51 or whatever they call it these days and what's going on out there, I'm as much in the dark as anybody else.
Okay, let's go back to that in a second, but we have somebody that's been holding for the last few minutes. Is that Gareth?
Hi.
Hi, and you're in Monterey Park.
That's right, Don.
Okay, Gareth, do you have a question for myself or my guest?
Yes, I do, but first I'd like to say that last week's show was a classic.
Oh, thank you.
It was excellent. Even my wife, who has no interest in the subject at all, was actually glued to the TV. What I'd like to ask, Carl, is even though most people will agree that there is something going on, there is a phenomenon, even though you know most people don't know what it is, the government's official position is that it's all nonsense. It's just a bunch of crazies and what have you. But through the release of information and documents and so forth, that's not the case. They actually do know something is going on. What I would like to ask, Carl, is why do you think they have this position when they know that something is going on, but publicly they say that it's nonsense? Why is that?
Well, the government's official position, at least as I have read it in the standard handout that they always send to you when you write about this, is that there is no national security implication associated with the phenomenon, which is, I think, if you think about that, that's a very artful crafting.
Yeah.
They're saying that, not that it's nonsense, not that you're all crazies, but rather we've decided there's no national security implication, so we're not doing anything about it.
Also, you were saying about the Roswell incident.
Yes.
In 1947, if in fact that was an extraterrestrial spacecraft, I mean, there must be some serious implications why they're not letting this stuff out to the public. But if that was an extraterrestrial spacecraft, knowing that the technology could be 1,000 years ahead of us or God knows how many years ahead of us, when you think of that we could, you know, if they actually got hold of the most simplest digital watch that we have today back in 1947, mm-hmm. It would completely baffle their most, the best experts. What do you think they would make of
it? I have a working hypothesis based on my experience with government. And it's not so much that what they're covering up is this arcane and wondrous knowledge, but they're covering up their mistakes.
Yeah.
They fumbled it somehow. I really think that that's much more likely.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Okay, thank
you.
Well,
you know, Carl, after 46 years of denying that such an event happened, however, how could they, in good faith, turn around and say, hey, look, we've been lying about this, and now these are the real facts? They painted themselves in a corner.
It puts them on a spot. There's no question about it.
Yeah, but Don, I understand what you're saying. They have, in fact, painted themselves into a corner. But when you think of the public opinion about this subject, and now that the facts are actually coming out, surely there will come a time in maybe the not-so-near future where, you know, they will actually say, well, hey, you know, this really did happen.
Well, you know, I'm continually asked, and I would like to get Carl's feedback on this too, Gareth, but
yeah.
While you're on the line, I'm continually asked, well, why would anybody cover this up, okay?
Yeah.
And, of course, I have no way of giving the definitive answer, but I can give what I consider to be informed speculation. Number one, in 1947, there was no other country on this planet that could match us militarily or economically. And we had just come out of one of history's most expensive wars, not only expensive in terms of dollars, but in human life. And suddenly, apparently, the government was confronted with something that literally would be like a bolt out of the blue. If, in fact, this was an extraterrestrial craft, our frontline fighter in those days, I mean, one of the hottest airplanes we had, could fly about 450 miles an hour in level flight. And suddenly they were confronted with something that could God know fly how fast. Not to mention the fact that if in fact that propulsion system could be duplicated, we would be talking about an entire upsetting of what this world runs on, which is oil. I mean, a whole new economic structure,
yeah,
which would destroy what we presently have. Not to mention other intangibles like what it would do to organized religion, what it would do to people's belief in themselves, in their God, or in life in general, and in any government's primary purpose.
No, I agree with you.
Is to maintain power.
Yeah.
And this suddenly would present them with a challenge where the people around might look up and say, well, hey, we're suddenly confronted with spacemen. What do I care what Uncle Sam says? You know?
No, I agree with you completely, Don, but all I can say is, that was then, this is now.
Exactly.
Right now, the United States is definitely the most powerful country in the world. I mean, a few weeks ago, they bombed Iraq simply because they could. I don't think they have anything to fear from any other country in the world. So really, this information, I mean.
Well, which brings us to one other spot.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you go, Gareth.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call.
No problem. Thank you,
and
Gareth.
Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to speak to my guest this evening, Mr. Carl Flock, who is not only a former member of Central Intelligence, but also a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. This gentleman has been in and around government for years and years and has a very visible and very influential UFO interest. You can call us by... Carl, this is something else. Now, we're talking about an area where there have been, God knows how many dramatic, how many covert operations that have been carried out. New technology. I mean, I've heard recently from a source that there is stuff out there, and this is how it was stated. Stuff that is decades ahead of anywhere else on the planet. Okay? Now, there was no, you know, pointed, you know, we're talking about aircraft or weapons, but stuff. All right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in 1984, the United States Air Force illegally and in violation of the law grabbed 89,000 acres of land around there. Later, they went to Congress and got permission to do that. But there is more rumor today that there is going to be, perhaps by the end of this year, and this is informed rumor, I might add, another huge land grab.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Down in Nevada.
Yeah.
Now, my question is this. Carl, you as a former Deputy Secretary of Defense, I mean, somebody that was in the upper echelon of government, we're talking about the world today is a vastly different place than it was 5 years ago. The
yeah.
Soviet Union is no longer. There is no threat. At best or worst, depending upon your point of view, the biggest threat we're looking at now today is from terrorism. And thank God we have people like the FBI that has been so instrumental in knocking some of these terrorist groups out on the East Coast. But who are we fearing today? Why do we still have this Cold War mentality going on down there? Why are there signs that state...
It's inertia, Don.
No, wait a minute. Why are there signs that state that they will shoot dead American citizens if they go too far on private land. I want to know what the deal is.
Go too far on where?
On their installational land.
Well, it's a secure area. That's SOP on any secure area. They'll shoot you if you cross over in anything.
If I go to any other military base in this state, for example, okay, and I cross a fence, they're not going to shoot me.
I wouldn't try it on in the context of what formerly was the Strategic Air Command facility. All I'm saying is that there are certain secure areas.
To begin with, those people that would shoot me down there, Carl, are not even U.S. military.
In which the use of deadly force is authorized. But, you know, actually, we're in an area that I am not in the least bit involved with. So I'm really not a good person to be asking about Area 51.
But you are one of those influential people.
I was.
Your
influence ends in this town the minute you're out of office.
You could go to certain people today, okay, that you knew when you were still active in government and
yes,
say, look, this is what I'm doing. Who do I go to find out about this?
I've done that. I have talked to the likes of Frank Carlucci. I've talked to Hans Mark. I've talked to numerous others. And all of them have, well, most of them have expressed serious interest. One basically laughed me out of his office, politely, because we're old friends. I have tried that. Believe me, I've tried it on two counts for two reasons.
Well,
one,
Congress today,
tell me,
Carl, yeah, Congress claims that neither they nor the DOD claim to know what's being flown down there. Now,
well, back to 51 again.
Right.
I was talking about Roswell.
Well, 51 would be a very likely spot where some, and according to rumor and people that claim to be in the know, people like journalist George Knapp,
yeah,
as confidential informants, claim that this is where some of these craft have been taken.
Okay.
Now, Congress nor DOD claim to know what the heck is being flown down there. So my point is, this area would be run by, as the conspiratist would claim,
mm-hmm,
the shadow government, the secret
yeah,
government.
Yeah.
Who, in fact, is in charge down there? And how do we find out? This is America.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know. I mean, I first of all, don't know who's in charge. I know that it's part of the Nellis Range, or at least it was. I have no idea what the current arrangements are and who's in charge. Has anybody straightforwardly asked that question of the Department of Defense?
Oh, absolutely.
Of the Department of Energy?
Absolutely. They keep passing, as a matter of fact, they keep passing the buck. I'll tell you what, let me let you off the hot pad here for a minute. We have a couple of calls.
Okay, good.
Let's go to John on line one in Tahunga. Good evening, John.
Hello, Don. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Did you have a question for my guest?
Yes, sir. I'd like to ask Carl. He had mentioned that since he was knee-high to a gray that his interest had been piqued in the phenomena. I was wondering, at what point or what happened to you that this interest started?
Well, I guess I probably was always a little strange. I've been interested in this kind of thing, like I say, ever since I was that small. My father used to read Jules Verne to me before I could read myself and that sort of thing. I suppose my mind was warped at an early age. But I would say the first thing that I can remember, and this is first time I've ever mentioned this publicly, but the first thing that I can remember on the subject was sitting at a picnic in the summer, either 1948 or 1949, on the tailgate of an old surplus army vehicle, listening to three or four men standing around talking about what they'd heard about a crashed flying saucer in the southwestern United States. And that I would have been at that time about five or six. And so that was the first instance. I also, my father and I and a best friend of mine and his brother and his father all had a sighting together when I was about 9 or 10. I don't remember precisely when.
Well,
I saw something which none of us could explain.
Right.
So that's where my interest was piqued, and it's held ever since. I even managed to finagle a waiver, as did a friend of mine, to be able to join the Ground Observer Corps before we were old enough, because we thought, apart from the fact that we were really interested in airplanes, we thought here was a chance to really get involved and maybe actually see something.
Yes. So at that time, since you saw something that wasn't conventional when you were a child, and Don, you know me, and I have been seeing Yvonne, and I'd like to say hello to Yvonne Smith, and thank you. And I am a client of hers, but I was wondering if you had any missing time, or maybe
no,
do you think you had an experience?
Nocturnal light.
Pardon?
To use the Heineck system of classification, this was a nocturnal light.
Basically, a light in the sky, Carl.
Yes. So it had nothing to do with any kind of a close encounter or anything that could possibly be construed as anything like that. And I have no sense of anything that is associated with an abduction phenomenon.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Jeff?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I've got to go. We have all the lines lit up here. I've got to take another call, but you have a good one, John.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
We're going to go to Tristan in Burbank on Salmon's Cable. Good evening, Tristan.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Just fine.
I got a question for Carl. With the falling of Russia and all the communists, how was it able that they were able to fool us for as long as they did to still like be a potential world power? And in my basically analogy of it, I would assume that they had to have been probably, you know, vulnerable at least a decade ago, but still was another decade that they were able to be a threat to, the world. And I would like to ask Carl if he has any comments.
Well, they were a garrison state, something which the kind of thing that Don has been concerned with, is we were talking about over the past few minutes, Don's concerned about going on out in Nevada is symptomatic of, and we've got to guard against. They were simply able to channel by fiat from Moscow all of the energies and resources of the country into building a military establishment that was indeed a serious threat.
It falls right down to you either use it or you lose it.
Yeah.
Now, could it have been possible that our government would, with the intelligence that we have, were we aware of any of this, but we let it continue so we could still get money from our Congress to continue our military?
I suppose you could talk to theories that would suggest that. I don't believe it myself.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's funny he should mention that, Carl, because if you can remember back, and I know I can, to when President Eisenhower left office and his famous speech where he mentioned to the American public, beware the military-industrial complex, I think what he was indicating was he was afraid that this group of military and industrial giants in this nation would perpetuate the Cold War to keep continually making weapons and arms to keep the profits rolling in. Would you say that that's fair?
I think actually what he was suggesting was something far more insidious, which is that in the course of confronting the enemy, we were making ourselves more and more like the enemy we were trying to stop.
Well, he probably would have been aware then of programs like Paperclip, where many Nazis were brought over to this country that American industry and science later utilized.
Oh, yes, sure.
All right. Tristan, did that answer your question?
Yeah, that pretty much. It just was why it was brought to my attention that my brother-in-law worked for, it was previously Ford Aerospace. Now, it's they were bought by a private company. And, just through the years, he's been, we always talk about topics of this. And he was just telling me, when we were in the Gulf War, a lot of the particular stuff that was used, he had worked on that. And he said that a lot of that stuff is 5 years to not even, older, that with the technology we have today is even farther, much more advanced than what we use. But of course, to just, protect our own interests, we're not going to release the cat out of the bag so early, when we could, actually we had an opportunity to test all the things and see what was really the capabilities of all this, the billions and billions of dollars.
Well, without a doubt, one thing that these folks do enjoy, and that's keeping secrets.
Oh, yeah, and they enjoy seeing their toys work. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thank you, Tristan. All right, we're going to take another quick commercial break because we should have taken two or three of them already, Carl, and we got so wrapped up. So
Okay. Hang
on, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back, Carl, and we still have some calls here that have been waiting, so let's take those real quickly.
Okay.
I'm going to go to John in North Hollywood on United Artists. Good evening, John.
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. Carl, I've read some things about the Roswell incident, and most of the literature that I've read basically presupposes that they were flying, investigating the operational air wing there that had the only atomic weapons operational air wing in the world at that time.
Yeah.
And basically for both of you, I was wondering, is there a continuing pattern of overflights of either atomic installations or research labs that you're aware of?
All throughout the history in the last 46 years.
Yes.
Military installations, nuclear weapons storage areas, nuclear power plants, military reservations, the whole shooting match, absolutely.
So obviously this is something that they're also covering up.
Let me tell you that, there may have been cases covered up on that, but there have been a lot of cases surfaced, particularly with reference to SAC installations, the former Strategic Air Command, both bomber and missile facilities. But something that I turned up on my most recent trip to Roswell, which was in May, was the widow of a man who was a member of a B-29 crew that was part of the 509 bomb group there at Roswell. And her husband came home from a training flight about the same time that the incident took place, and reported to her, told her that they had a UFO pull up and fly formation with them. And it was right off their wingtip, and they were instructed not to go public with it. They were to keep their mouths shut. And her recollection was that this formation flying incident with a UFO from the 509 was either just before the news broke about the Roswell crash, or shortly after.
Well, I have a friend of mine who actually had gone to MIT and has worked at Caltech, basically in the area of fusion, and he knew that I had an interest in this field, and basically he couldn't say a lot, but apparently there is a large government involvement in that field also of any type of new energy or propulsion that they're really trying to clamp down on, and it's just very very strange to me. I'm a new listener, so I'd like to tell you also I'm really enjoying this show.
Well, great, and think about supporting it if possible, John.
Taken the numbers down tonight to send in.
Fantastic.
All right, well, sure. I'll be listening then every weekend.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And we're going to go to Kathy in Ventura. Good evening, Kathy.
Hey, Don, how you doing?
I'm fine. Did you have a question for Carl?
Yeah, one thing to say real quick. I missed you guys last week. I was out of town.
Shame on you.
I know, I'm so depressed. One thing I wanted to find out, maybe you or your guest might be able to tell me. John and I are going to be taking a buzz up around Area 51 soon this summer. And we're wondering, are there any major safety precautions we got to take? Or is that been hearing a lot of weird stuff going on up there lately?
Stay on all the public roads and do not get off the public roads.
Yeah, we've got our updated maps and everything. So.
You know, have you got a copy of the guide to Area 51?
Yes, I do have that.
I have not seen it myself, but I've talked to some people who know, and they say that that's extremely well done, and, uh-huh. and you would do well to heed what he says there.
Gotcha. As a matter of fact, we have the review of that in the new issue of UFO Magazine.
You know, that hasn't hit the newsstand here in Ventura yet, and I've been waiting for it patiently.
Well, we just got it out to the subscribers, and we always get it out to the subscribers before it goes to the newsstand.
It's a great issue, too, Don.
Oh, have you read it?
Yeah, I have my copy right here in front of me, as a matter of fact.
All right.
Good, I'll have to watch for it then.
Now, that was an unsolicited plug. I love it.
Hey, that's pretty good. Yeah, we've got that guide, and it's an excellent guide. It's got a lot of really good information in there. We planned this like a military survivalist trip. They're prepared. So it sure turned out to be pretty interesting.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Kathy, if you guys go, let us know what you found when you get back.
Oh, I sure will.
All right. Thank you.
Those eyes to the guide, guys.
You bet.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Carl, you wanted to discuss some more about Roswell. You know, I've heard criticisms from various people within the field that Roswell is all talked out. I mean, after all, it was almost a half a century ago.
Yeah, that seems to me to be incredibly short-sighted, because if, in fact, what we have here is the recovery of an alien spacecraft and possibly members of its crew, then what else do you need? And if we can break this one out, then that's the answer. We've got the case of the millennium.
Well, now let me ask you something, because if the implications are correct, then we have perhaps an even more serious situation than what we may realize. And what I'm referring to is this. Over the years, there have been many highly rated researchers, people that have dug into this subject, people like Donald Kehoe, people like Leonard Stringfield, individuals of that rank. But yet, it was not until a very brief mention in the mid-60s and then Bill Moore's work in the late 70s, early 80s, that we really found out that something happened at Roswell. Now, during all those years in the mid-50s, when people like Kehoe were out literally beating themselves to death on the Pentagon, nobody was even whispering about Roswell. Now, the assumption is that an extremely covert, highly placed, literally handful of people had their thumb on this and kept it from everybody else. And I'm talking about military as well as civilian.
I find that difficult to believe.
Well, then how do you explain the fact that nobody, but literally nobody, knew about it? How do you explain that in 1968, and unfortunately his name escapes me right now, but he stated publicly and was quoted, an Air Force general, that all the UFO reports with national security considerations went to something other than Blue Book?
I can't think of the general's name either. It was a memo, as a matter of fact, that he wrote. It was a written memorandum in reference to that, that they went elsewhere. And I would say that I would interpret that somewhat differently than others in the field, as meaning that anything that the Air Force felt it fell within their mandate as the air arm of the national security establishment, that they felt that there was anything that indicated a national security implication, it would go elsewhere.
Well, Carl, this is what some highly placed congressional personnel told George Knapp, all right? It raises the unpleasant possibility that secret programs have been taken outside of the United States government altogether and have been put into the hands of private contractors as a way of avoiding public scrutiny. Private contractors, and some of the people's names that immediately come to mind, are organizations like Wackenhut and EG&G.
Well, Wackenhut's a security company.
Yeah, I know very well what Wackenhut is. But they are some of the people that have been implicated in the situation down at Area 51. How else would you...
EG&G is an O&M contractor that does a lot of work for DOE.
Right, for DOE.
Yeah.
But they are private contractors.
Well, now, yeah, but who else, Don, just stop for a minute. Who else in this country does the work for the government that has to get done? It's not done by the government. It's done by private contractors. Otherwise, we might as well have not fought the Cold War. We'd have socialism.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. But here's the other thing. Who has final scrutiny on these people? Because it's obvious that the Pentagon claims they don't. Nobody can get anything from Central Intelligence. Nobody can get anything from Department of Energy. These people have been caught in illegal actions. I mean, who watches the watchers?
Well, one would hope that the Congress of the United States does the watch. That's what they're supposed to do.
Well, they've fallen down on the job, unfortunately.
Well, if there's one way to jack them up and get them to do their job, and that's for constituents to make things very uncomfortable for them if they don't. The squeaky wheel as always gets the grease. And that's with respect specifically to Roswell, that's what we're trying to do.
But as soon as you mention UFOs, the problem is you're immediately sent to the crazy house.
Well,
faction.
When you speak with members of Congress, or when you are writing to members of Congress, you don't necessarily have to cast it in terms of UFOs. You can cast it in terms of an issue of a violation of the constitutional rights of the citizens of the United States, some of whom are your constituents, Mr. Congressman so-and-so, and they have been denied these rights by virtue of all these actions that have taken place, there is a general public right to know things which no longer justify any form of classification, etc. You don't have to pitch it in terms of UFOs. You have to pitch it in terms of something the congressman, in terms of something the congressman can address without that stigma.
All right, my guest this evening on UFOs Tonight is Mr. Carl Flock, a former member of the Central Intelligence Agency, a former assistant deputy director in the Department of Defense, and we are talking about UFOs. Let's go to back to the lines. I have, I believe, Michelle from Sherman Oaks on United Artists. Is that correct?
Yes, that's my name.
All right, good evening. Did you have a question for my guest?
Yes, Mr. Black. While you were in office or active, was there any talk or plan that the government would, since they have so much backup of secret files on this so-called phenomena, of releasing any of it to us? For example, is there more movies coming out? There's more of a buzz on it. Is there, maybe while you were in office or maybe in the future, finally they're going to release to us seriousness about it?
I have heard rumors to that effect. Nothing ever in any official capacity. I never heard anything about anything of the sort when I was in office. But I have colleagues and I have friends and associates who have told me that they are, you know, they've heard this kind of thing. But I can't give it anything any more credence than just that, a rumor.
Wow. Okay.
Did that answer your question, Michelle?
Well, he does.
Alrighty.
Vaguely, but he does.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's go to Ray in Ventura. Good evening, Ray.
Good evening, Don. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Enjoying the program. I got a question for Carl, or a couple statements and a question.
All right.
First of all, I think what Carl did is he branded himself early on in this adventure so that if he'd become the president, he probably still could have not gotten any information, by expressing his interest in the subject. I think it's pretty clear that if you have an interest in it, you're kind of set aside. Is that possible, Carl?
It's certainly possible, and I would say again that everything I've said about not knowing anything official is strictly based on my own personal experience in official capacity. You know, so that's certainly true. They might say, "Oh, this guy, you know, he's clearly somebody we can't trust." That's very possible.
Well, it might be that, and it might be that the Don's suspicions are right, and that the history of the suspicion of a secret government may be actually true, you know. And so if you're a guy with an interest in it and you seem to have the talent and the knowledge to kind of climb the chain of command, you'd almost be like someone with the plague, you know, to that particular small group of people, you know.
That's always possible.
I was interested in what you said about Congress. I have been trying to get a congressman to give me some assistance with the Social Security Administration. And I can tell you that the Social Security Administration is about as frightened and scared of congressmen as I am of maybe Mickey Mouse. I mean, they literally just ignore congressmen.
In other words, you're saying that bureaucracy is
entrenched. Let me say something. That speaks very poorly for your congressman's constituent services as opposed to the reality of the way these things work. And I will not get into a political debate here, but in my experience working on the Hill and my knowledge of the way things go now, if a congressman does the job the way he's supposed to do it, those people go through hoops, believe me. So your guy's not doing his job.
Well, I have a letter, I have a newspaper article right in front of me that I was sending out to people where George Steinbrenner had, bribed or gave out $16,000 to a variety of different congressmen, and in return for that, he got something like he got $58 million. You know, so what it boils down to is congressmen are available to certain people under certain circumstances, and they're not available to other people or won't do anything. I'm trying to figure out how that's anything but bribery. But my point is that since you're discussing the Roswell thing tonight, if that is a spaceship or was a spaceship from outer space, the implications of that might be so extraordinary that the American people simply couldn't handle it. You know?
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I think, quite frankly, if indeed that's what it was, that at the time the event took place, the government acted quite correctly. They didn't know what they had. They didn't know whether we were going to be invaded from outer space the next week. They didn't know how people would react to the knowledge that there were beings traveling through our airspace, and the government couldn't do anything about it. It was it was in the context of a world that was already in upheaval from the end of World War II and moving right into the Cold War. It was probably the right thing to do then. I find it extremely difficult to believe that we would have a major upheaval, social and political upheaval, if the facts were revealed today.
Well, Carl, wouldn't you say that the American public and even the world public have been subtly conditioned, whether it was knowingly or unknowingly, over the last 30 years to be more open, more receptive to the idea of alien life? And I'm referring to classic television programs like Star Trek, films like Close Encounters, films like E.T., Star Wars. I mean, these all had an extraterrestrial theme. And I think people today are much more open to that. I mean,
I think that's absolutely true. I think most people would be delighted at the prospect. They would be excited by it, and possibly so. So, you know, yeah, I would say people are considerably more sophisticated about this and much more open and accepting about it than they were 46 years ago.
But one other thing we also have to address. You know, everybody, and myself included, chide the government for not being open and forthcoming about this phenomenon. But yet the phenomenon itself certainly has not gone out of its way to announce itself openly. And this should give people cause to think about this. I mean, whatever they are doing, apparently they're doing it under their own agenda. You know, I've been on Larry King on CNN 3 times talking about this subject. And every time I've been on, King has asked me, or the host has asked me, well, gee, Don, when are they going to land on the White House lawn? Well, the answer is whenever they're damn good and ready, okay? And not a second before. Whatever they're doing it in secret. Would you agree?
Let me inject a thought here, Don, then I want to get off of the line for other people. You know, Richard Hall stated that he believed that they may be coming from another dimension. I think the astronomer who was a big part of this movement some time ago, McDonald, was that his name?
James McDonald?
Yeah, he stated that he thought they may be coming from another dimension.
Well, yeah,
and then, of course, there's Fortness.
He postulated a number of possible theories.
Well, supposing what landed in New Mexico was something from that somehow or another got into this dimension and couldn't get back and crashed permanently, you know, almost sounds like science fiction, but I think it's a valid idea. Supposing something from another dimension came into this dimension, crashed, you know, before it could get back to its own dimension, how in the world would you ever explain that to the people of the world, you know?
Well, you know, if it was only a single case, Ray, that would be one thing, but we're talking about literally thousands
of thousands.
We're
only talking about one that crashed.
Well, no, there have been reports of others that are crashed. Roswell happens to be the most famous.
It's the only one that I know of where one was supposed to...
It's also the one for which we have the largest body of testimony
and evidence.
Supporting evidence of some solid event having taken place.
See the other dimensional thing would easily explain why they can disappear right in front of your face, as has been reported thousands of times.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but there are also other possible explanations.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right, Ray, thank you for your call.
My pleasure.
And keep listening. Right. Keep those eyes to the sky.
Okay, Don. Thank you.
You bet. Okay, Carl, you know, a few years ago, in 1988, there was a 2-hour special on television called UFOs Cover Up Life.
I saw that, yeah.
Okay. One of the people that was interviewed on that program was William Moore, who, of course, is a researcher here in Southern California, the fellow that co-authored the first book on Roswell.
Yes.
And on this program, there were two people who appeared on television, electronically altered,
yes,
that one of the producers, Kurt Brubaker, claimed he saw their bona fides. He was convinced that they were genuine, claimed to be intelligence officers that were going public. Okay. I think there would not be too many people that would agree that there was quite a bit of smoke pumped out during that presentation. For example, the aliens enjoy Tibetan bell music and they like strawberry ice cream,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Make them seem nice, harmless, and so forth. I don't buy that for a minute. But they did state that there was an alien presence in Nevada. They did state that these extraterrestrials had a base there. They did state that there was extraterrestrial craft there attempted to be back engineered.
Uh-huh.
Now, out of your own, you know, just your own ideas about the subject. Why would there not have been tens of thousands of people marching on Washington?
Because they didn't buy it for a minute. Frankly, I thought that this was Condor and whatever, the Falcon, right?
Right.
I think they're for the birds myself.
You don't buy them?
No.
Okay, now, you as a former intelligence officer, you as a former Assistant Secretary of Defense, why not?
The whole thing was so incredibly hokey as to be almost laughable. It was rather like watching Gerald Anderson, to be honest with you. You know who Gerald Anderson is?
Oh, of course. Yes. Of course I do.
Yeah.
I just hadn't thought about him in 6 months.
Good
with
for you.
Yeah. This particular Condor Falcon, though, now, I personally have talked to Moore on a number of occasions,
mm-hmm.
and he's willing to go to the wall that these guys are legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that he's bamboozled, or do you think he's in on it?
I'd rather not comment on that.
Frankly. Ah, come on.
No, I don't. Well, let me put it this way: I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that Bill Moore has been flogging that one for a long time, and he could certainly feel free to continue doing that. I just don't buy it.
All right. I'll tell you what: we're going to have to take another quick break. I'm going to do a live commercial here, and when we come back, more with my guest, Mr. Carl Flock. And if you want to talk to him, about 10:30 I start to wind down here. I think I need another jolt of coffee. And I'll guarantee you, you're going to enjoy that. Let's go back to the phone lines. Carl, we have Greg and Van Nuys on United Artists. Good evening, Greg.
Hi, Don. Carl, when were you in the CIA and in the government?
I was with CIA 1966 to 1972.
I see. Just a little bit different question. Do you have any information you can share on either or both the JFK assassination and the Vietnam MIA POW situation?
I don't know anything more than anyone else does who pays somewhat about a certain amount of attention to the JFK thing. I never had anything at all officially to do with that. As far as the MIAs go, that's been a personal concern for a long time. In fact, I'm still wearing an MIA bracelet.
I see.
And I frankly believe that there are, you know, that we don't have all the answers yet, and there may yet be some guys over there that we need to bring home.
You know, Carl, that's still something that gives me chills. I was in a camp called A4 on the DMZ on Easter Sunday of 1972 when we got overrun by elements of the 304th and the 308th NVA divisions. We literally came within a hair's breadth of being captured or killed there. By the grace of God, we were able to E&E out the back and get a ride home on a chopper, but it was pretty scary.
Yep, I can believe that.
Okay.
Oh, Don?
Yes, sir.
Did you happen to see Larry King Friday about the writer who had made certain claims about UFOs and has changed his mind about that?
No, I didn't.
I can't remember the guy's name because I was in a different room and he had kind of an unusual name. I wasn't sure of the correct pronunciation. Then there was somebody else on KABC Friday night with Tom Hall at midnight, and his name was Sterling Blake. I don't know if it was the same guy.
Was what?
His name was Sterling Blake.
Sterling Blake. I'm not familiar with him.
That's a pen name. He wouldn't give his real name. And also, he said the same thing, and I wasn't sure whether that was one and the same guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Greg. You can always get the straight scoop here.
Sure.
And if we don't know it, we'll ask.
Okay, Don. Great program. Thanks for that.
You bet. Bye-bye. Right. Let's go to Bert in Burbank, who has not called us in a long time.
Hey, I've been out doing regression sessions on Sunday. I'm sorry. I've missed stuff here. I've got to catch up.
Boy, I'll tell you, Bert, you've missed a bunch.
I heard Kathy or someone talking about the show last week, so I'm going to have to order your tape and get a hold of that and see what it was like. I didn't get to record it myself, so yes, I got to catch up here. Well, let me it's been a very interesting show. I was wondering if it happened to be Brigadier General Bolander that you guys might have been talking about.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because I know that I think maybe in one of Tim Good's books it was talked about a good bit.
I couldn't remember his name to save my neck.
Yeah, I'm not even sure why I came up with it, but nevertheless.
I think the memo is reproduced in Tim's Top Secret.
It probably very easily could be. Although I do understand that there was some misinterpretations in that. I'd have to go back and check specifically in his latest book, Contact. Isn't that what it is?
I think that's the correct title, yeah.
Yeah, and...
My book is going to be called, at least right now, the working title is Going Home. Is a book.
Your book is?
Yes.
And what? Tell us about your book. We haven't heard about that.
Well, this is I am currently doing this Roswell research under a grant from the Fund for UFO Research, and I will be doing a report for them, which I intend to be delivering to them before the end of the year, and then this will be followed by a commercially published work, which is tentatively titled "Going Home." It will be a novel with a nonfiction epilogue,
and
based on my report for the fund.
What is the significance of the title of Going Home?
Well, you may be familiar with the old spiritual by that title.
Actually, I'm not.
Oh, well, there's a very well-known old spiritual that is titled Going Home. And I'll just leave you with that. It's a standalone.
So are we going to get a review copy, Carl?
Oh, of course.
All right.
Let me...
Always plugging for the magazine.
Yeah. Let me ask one more thing, actually a little comment. You know, Ray was talking a little bit before about the possibility of interdimensional travel and the possibility of the Roswell craft or other crafts actually being interdimensional, and which is, I think, a very valid idea. But I have an unusual kind of thought, whereas why do some people, not necessarily Ray, but why do some people think that it's any easier traveling interdimensionally than it is traveling across great distance? As a matter of fact, from the things that we at least can suppose that we may know, gleaned from numerous sources,
well, you know,
if you can do one, you can do the other.
Quite frankly, I see no dichotomy there.
But a lot of people do make that distinction, like especially Mr. Valet.
As though that were somehow easy to do. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, and I think, though, you know, some people... I'm not speaking necessarily for myself here, but I think some people suggest that it may not necessarily, or thinking that it may not necessarily be easier to do, but if, in fact, it is true that we have really no solid evidence of spacecraft entering our atmosphere, et cetera, then we have to come up with another answer for where they come from. And if they're popping in from another dimension or a parallel universe,
well,
there's an answer.
Well,
there's
look, guys,
right.
we got to take a break. It's we're a minute past the half hour, so we're gonna have to take a break. Okay, we are back, and before we go back to the phones, once again, let me remind you: send me a postcard, please, to Don Ecker in care of UFO Magazine, P.O. Box 1053. Think. Would you like to see this program go to Saturday night, or do you want it to stay right here where it's at on Sunday? Send me the card this week. And we are back with my guest, Mr. Carl Flock, and Bert, who's going to be finishing up right here.
Yes, Carl, just commenting on something that you said a moment ago, is that if we're not seeing craft coming into the atmosphere, then there's that possibility of the interdimensional travel.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly true. However, we certainly know that we have at least three different type of stealth aircraft, and right there is the whole basis of it. We are, and we're working with relatively childlike technology. And just last month on the front of Popular Mechanics, there was a picture of a stealth ship that has been around for many years, being basically hidden. And so our technology is working for the same thing, and with a technology at advanced enough to travel in space, as supposedly these craft do, I don't see why they couldn't have their own stealth technology that's even better than ours.
Oh, so. Sure. No, I was just offering that because that's a line of argument that I have heard from people who offer the interdimensional travel idea.
Right. Well, I think that's a very valid interdimensional travel and possibly even things that we have no earthly idea about. Guys, it was good talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Bert, keep those eyes to the skies.
You bet.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We are going to go to Ralph in Sherman Oaks on United Artists. Good evening, Ralph.
Hey, Don, it's Ralph. Did the graphics for you for the video?
Yes. Yeah. How you doing?
How you doing?
We're doing just fine. Did you have a question for Carl?
Yeah, I do. I'd like to ask him. I kind of got your show halfway in, but you were talking about 51 and stuff, and I was wondering if Carl knew anything about, you know, Tehachapi and Llano facility, and if it's possible, Don, that maybe, you know, if they got the stuff out of 51, maybe the government has contracted it out to Northrop and Lockheed, and they're possibly doing, stealth tests out there, you know, at those facilities.
Carl?
Don't know anything about it. I must say that I'm focusing my attention on trying to get something serious done about Roswell, and I really have not gotten into the Area 51 and all the other lore that is associated with
that. Okay. Okay, well, that's just about it. I didn't know much of the show was about Roswell, Don.
Okay, well, yeah, Roswell. You know, I kind of think, though, quite frankly, that, that many of these things actually fit into the same mold. We're talking about a crash of a potential or possible alien craft. Where would it have been taken? Who would have worked on it? I mean, who would have been responsible? This stuff all mixes in.
Right.
Okay, well, look, thank you for your call.
Okay.
And keep listening.
Okay, we'll see
you. And tune in at 9 from now on.
Oh, I will, and I'll send you that tape.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. See ya.
Let's go to David in Palmdale. Good evening, David.
Yeah, this is David in Palmdale.
Yes, good evening.
I just had some quick comment. You
okay.
Mentioned the, I think it was your guest mentioned about EG&G.
Yes.
Okay, EG&G.
Well, actually, I did, and,
oh, okay.
And he continued the thing.
Yeah, I just got a couple things from them. Yeah, EG&G special, EG&G energy measurements works for the DOE, and then you got EG&G special projects, which is only Department of Defense.
That's right.
They also have recently started an operation. It's a small operation, but it's in Palmdale, California, right where Lockheed supposedly has some other secret stuff going on in a hangar next to where they refurbish the F-117s.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So that's some inside information, but EG&G does have special projects, which is strictly Department of Defense. They're also located in Nevada. They supposedly are at the Groom area, and the other EG&G Energy Measurements Division is only out of Mercury area.
All right, David.
So that's just some quick info for you.
I appreciate the call.
I gotta
How long have you been listening?
Oh, I've been listening to your show forever. I just I like it on Sundays because that's the only time I'm off. I will work in this.
Hey, don't tell me that now. Send me a postcard.
Okay.
19 cents.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in this industry, so I gotta, you know, that's just some. I got that information that I gave to you from some sources, so I appreciate your show, and I'm gonna get back on the TV and start listening.
Okay, David. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's move on. God, I don't know, Carl. I think everybody suddenly woke up. The lines are all lit up. Let's go to line one. We've got Robert in La Puente on United Artists. Good evening, Robert.
Hey, I have a question regarding Project Relay.
I beg your pardon. You're going to have to speak up.
I have a question for Carl.
Okay.
I wonder if you have any information regarding Project Red Light or Project Ordeal.
Project Red Light?
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Carl?
I heard it. I have no information on it. To be honest with you...
God, you were the Assistant Secretary of Defense. What did you do?
No, I was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. There was lots of them.
Okay, but yes. What'd you do?
What did I do?
Didn't they tell you any of this good stuff?
No, they didn't tell me any of this good stuff. They kept me in the dark. What can I say? No, truthfully, my sense of what I have read of about Red Light and Snowbird and all that stuff is there isn't anything to it. But that's just a personal opinion based on simply reading the stuff and not spending any time doing any serious research. So, if my opinion is just that, my opinion.
Well, you know, Carl, that brings up something interesting. Okay, now, I'm sure you, as a matter of fact, you may have even personally known Barry Goldwater.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. Barry Goldwater, the 1964 Republican nominee running for president, one of the most powerful senators around, okay, for years and years. A major general, or he may have even achieved
general,
lieutenant,
yeah.
general.
Yeah, he retired as a major general, Air Force Reserve.
United States Air Force Reserve, a World War II veteran. I mean, the guy was in the Armed Forces Committee. He was one of the most powerful senators this country had.
He was the chairman.
He could not get into Wright-Patterson, okay, into the Blue Room, or what is called the Blue Room, which nobody really knows what it is. His good friend, Curtis LeMay, who was the base general, claimed that he couldn't even get in. Now, Curt LeMay, we're talking about heavy stuff.
Yes.
Barry Goldwater,
by the
we're
way,
talking
the,
very
by the way,
heavy.
The Curt LeMay was the, if you will, the rabbi or the patron of William Blanchard, who was the commander of the 509th Bomb Group.
The 509th, that's correct. Now, if they couldn't get in there, who in the world could?
Well, it's a question of the old need to know thing, and if you take a look at the date when this event took place, when Goldwater asked about it, he was not quite the powerful senator that he was later. Further, even though LeMay was, I guess he was chief AMC at the time. I've forgotten now.
Right.
Even though he may have been chief, if he didn't have any particular specific need to know about that particular activity.
Granted, but who would have had a need to know? Who would have been in charge?
Whoever was responsible for the project.
But you see,
on the project.
All these years, that buck still keeps getting passed. Nobody is willing to take
well,
it.
Well, yeah, but we don't even really know what it was that he was denied access to. What I'm saying is that it's very. If you look at the letter that everyone touts about as an example of Goldwater's denial of access, it doesn't tell you a whole heck of a lot. About what it was that he thought he was asking to see and what he was denied access to. It's one of those that has been, if you go back and take a look at it, it's one of those that has been blown, I think, significantly out of proportion. And Goldwater himself has said that, too.
All right, Robert, did that answer your question?
Yes, I have another thing to say, too. My friend and I, this is for you, Don, my friend and I, we guess we've had a sighting of some UFO, I guess, near our house. And I was wondering if you know any flight paths of Aurora. You know about that, right?
Well, I know what the popular press refers to as the Aurora. The Air Force denies that there is such a thing. Well, it's also been called Senior Citizen, but nobody knows. I don't know what the proper name is.
Well, I hear Aurora has a flight path above us. You know, I mean, in this area. Do you know anything about that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you.
Aurora. I hear there's a flight path going towards our area. And,
yeah, that allegedly it's been tracked or something has been tracked coming in from the Pacific Ocean overflying California into Nevada.
Oh, okay. I believe my friend and I have seen Aurora, and so have other people in my neighborhood that we've seen the allegedly Aurora.
Did you hear the skyquakes?
Yes, there was a little, like a little tremor, like a sonic boom.
Okay. Well, look, Robert, we've got to move along, but thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go to Bill in Sherman Oaks on United. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. Carl, I had a question. I didn't catch the first part of the show.
Yeah.
Am I to understand that you hold CIA credentials?
No. That's not true.
Oh. Okay.
No, I was with the agency from 1966 to 1972. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. At what capacity?
I was an intelligence officer.
I see. So you don't carry credentials.
That's correct.
I happen to know someone.
I only did a very short time when I was with the agency.
I happen to know someone right now, as a matter of fact, an acquaintance of mine, who showed me his credentials, as a matter of fact, and he says something that you never really lose. You always carry those with you.
That's nonsense.
Pardon me?
In a word, nonsense.
Hmm. Do they take those back from you when you leave the agency?
Virtually no one in the agency ever had them.
That's interesting. How did he get his, do you suspect?
I have no idea.
If someone needed to present that form of ID to someone to prove that they are with the CIA, what type of ID would they show?
If you need something like that to prove that you are with the CIA, you are issued such documentation.
I see. So then, in other words, yours was more on a secretive type of capacity where you were not given any type of credentials.
Well, in other words, most of the time I was with the agency, I didn't need them.
I see. Can I ask you what you did for the agency?
You can ask.
Okay. You're not going to answer.
Right.
I see. Okay. What are you currently doing now?
I'm an independent writer and researcher.
So what are you writing about?
I'm currently working on the Roswell case.
I see. I assume then you've seen the most recent tape, the Roswell incident.
Oh, the Roswell incident?
Yes.
Oh, if that's the one by, what's his name, Mark, I can't think of his last name right now, but yeah, if that's what you're talking about, yes.
What are your feelings on that?
I thought it was a pretty decent summary of the case as it was known as of the time they did the tape, before an awful lot more information was provided.
You seem fairly knowledgeable on ufology in general.
Oh, he's been involved for years, Bill.
Have you seen the more recent tape called The Messengers of Destiny?
No.
Have you, Don?
I'm not sure whether I have or not.
This is something that was put out by Wendell Stevens. And,
no, I have not.
That's interesting. It's about the Mexico sightings within the last 2 years and the rash of sightings that they had down there. Do you know anything about that, Carl?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
I have heard about the rash of sightings. I have heard about that, you know, there's been a fair amount of activity there, but I don't know anything more than that. I'm not familiar with the tape either.
It's a very interesting tape. I have nothing to do with it, but I viewed it several times, and one of your callers earlier, Don, had mentioned something about public awareness, and it's just interesting on that tape how they basically say that over 90% of the population had experienced those sightings visually within that two-year period.
Yeah, there were some extremely provocative videos taken during the height of the eclipse.
And they got the mayor of that particular town to come forth and talk to Nippon Television and discuss his feelings about that and how he went to his superiors and they had told him that it was okay for him to divulge the truth pertaining those incidences, and they apparently welcome those visitations down there, and 90% of the population is not afraid, and pretty much with the census that they did feel very open towards the phenomena that occurred down there for 2 years.
Highly unusual and very strange, without a doubt. Bill, we've got to move along. I thank you for your call. We've got some other calls waiting, but please keep tuning in.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go to Jeff in Hollywood on Century Cable. Good evening, Jeff.
Yeah, how's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Okay, I just had a quick comment about something someone was mentioning earlier about stealth technology and about, you know, the current UFO sightings.
Yes.
I was thinking of the possibility that not many people thought of, that maybe, you know, they do have stealth technology, but then they may be, you know, susceptible to the same mechanical errors as our technology, so therefore maybe a certain, you know, low percentage of them do get sighted.
Are you talking about the aerial anomalies?
You're
talking about UFOs.
Right.
What do you think, Carl?
Well, sure it's possible.
Well, I'm saying, for instance, like, you know, there's only 10%. ever get, you know, sighted by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know, there could be, you know, thousands and thousands, but yeah, we're on.
Now, how did you come up with that figure, Jeff? Only 10% get sighted.
No, I'm just saying, for instance.
Hypothetically. Okay.
I'm saying perhaps just a small amount. There's actually more than we see. It's just, you know, a rare occurrence that we see these.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. You know, I think there are as many plausible theories about what's going on and what may or may not be working for whatever it is we're seeing, as there are people who are thoughtfully considering it like you are. I am trying to latch on to something that is somewhat more tangible than that, and that is the opportunity to break loose whatever it is that has been kept secret all these many years about Roswell. And, you know, perhaps actually bring to light bodies and debris or material from the spacecraft, whatever it was.
All right.
Okay.
Was that it, Jeff?
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, comment that, you know, I thought it was possible that they did have stealth technology, but maybe, you know, it doesn't work all the time.
All right. Thank you for your call.
All
please
right.
Keep listening. Okay, let's go to Miles in Woodland Hills. Good evening, Miles.
Hi, Don. How you doing?
I can just barely hear you.
Well, I'm going to speak up real loud. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay. I just wanted to comment about what you were talking about earlier about how the government painted itself in a corner with releasing information.
Uh-huh.
And I always felt that the radio projects like SETI and all the other searches for radio signals were always just a means for them to come clean. They could say, well, we found the signal, and now we can go public, and I always felt that that was part of those projects. They really didn't have their heart in them.
Well, you know, they changed...
Carl Sagan is the front man for the cover-up. That's a good idea. I like that one.
Well, you know, there have been other people. There have been other people that have suggested that.
Oh yeah, I know. I think Carl would love that one.
They changed the name from SETI, however, to the High Resolution Microwave Survey. They did not want UFOs or ETs mixed in with their search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
I'll tell you something here. Let me give you a little inside look at Capitol Hill. Part of the reason was they were very concerned they weren't going to get their money. And they had to make it much more mundane and dull, like most projects of that ilk.
I love it. I love it. Our government at work. All right. Okay, Miles. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing, John. I'm sharing in the same frustration that you are about Carl's answers. I'd like to hear some more facts that he knows about things like that. Maybe saving it for the book, or
well, maybe we can get him back, and I'll put thumb screws on him.
That'd be great.
Well, hey, if we talk about Roswell, we can talk all kinds of facts. I don't know beats about Area 51.
Yeah. All right. Miles, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, John.
Okay, we got a good one. We got John in Atlanta, Georgia. Good evening, John.
John.
Yes, sir.
I live in Atlanta, and I listened to your show last week.
Okay.
And I'm very interested in all this, and I really don't know much about it, but I'm going to take advantage of your advice and your guest advice last week. If the gentleman that you had as a guest tonight would not furnish credentials or what he did with the Central Intelligence Agency, why should we believe that this man really was with that agency?
Feel free.
Well, you know, that when somebody is a part of an intelligence organization like that, John, they do sign, and I know when I was in the Army, I had a top security clearance. They sign documents swearing that they will not discuss anything that they saw in confidence with a security classification during that term of service. And it's very legitimate from that aspect. I mean, there's nothing hokey about that.
But I also understand that if I were to call the Central Intelligence Agency, they would tell me that they can't give me any information on this gentleman.
That's correct, yes.
And
that is
yet
correct.
He will not submit any proof that he worked for that agency. Wouldn't I be remiss in just believing his word?
Well, I happen to know Mr. Flock, and I know, in fact, that he was a member of Central Intelligence.
Well, in line with your last program, I would also like to ask some other information, Don. I would like to ask, what specific law enforcement agency did you serve with?
I served with several. I served with one in Pennsylvania. I served with one in Colorado. And I served with one...
Could you name, by name, those specific law enforcement agencies so that we could take your specific suggestion and check out your own background?
You know who I think this is? I think this is Bill Cooper. I'll tell you what, you have a nice day. Let's go to line one. Nobody there. Carl?
Yeah.
That's a particular asshole that I've exposed personally in the pages of the magazine, and I'm not even gonna deal with him.
You think we were blessed with Bill Cooper?
I believe so.
Ah.
I believe so.
Well, I'm
anyway, we're down to the last couple of minutes of the program. What are you involved in as far as right now? What do you see happening in the next year or so as far as this research? Do you see something cracking in Congress in a positive nature?
Yeah, I think that we're going to see in relatively short order. I think we're going to see this effort move from a, if you will, a preliminary inquiry that will provide the basis for the congressman involved to request of the two committees that they are associated with that has jurisdiction here,
mm-hmm.
a formal committee staff investigation that may also involve bringing in an investigative team from a from the GAO, which would then lead, I would think, to public hearings. And I would not be, I don't think you all ought to be surprised to see something like that happening within a year.
And, you know, Congress moves slowly, but once these guys get their teeth into something, particularly the individual members who have a particular concern, they really stick with it. And secondly, there is a parallel effort that is just now being explored to take some legal action in federal courts. And I can't really talk more about that right now because we're just very much in the preliminary phase of it.
All right. Well, now, just a week ago, there was a demonstration that took place in front of the White House.
Yeah.
Okay, and I know for a fact that you were very concerned about this demonstration before it happened.
Yes.
What were your original concerns, and how do you feel it ended up?
Well, my original concern was that at worst, it could add to the what you might call the kook factor, that it would cause people who we are trying to work with to take this seriously in political life, members of Congress, to shy away because they just can't afford to have that kind of a label hung on. I think that the outcome was, well, and at best, I thought that it would be essentially harmless and energy essentially wasted, and I think the latter is what happened. I do want to applaud the folks from Operation Right to Know for doing a really good job because I think they presented themselves very well, and I don't want to take credit where it's not due, but I think they took the criticisms of that Fred Whiting and I gave them and turned them to good use. They did a good job.
Well, I noticed that there were some news broadcasts that aired out here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And of course, the broadcasters were talking to the, you know, the woman that had 10 hybrid babies and so forth.
Yeah.
I think that this is one of the problems we encounter in this particular field, is the way that the many people within the media portray this to the public at large.
Oh, I agree, and that's why we were concerned to be sure that they tried to minimize those kinds of opportunities. And I think they generally did a good job of that. Based on what I saw back here, I did not see, say, CNN's coverage, but what I saw back here, they played it quite straight, and that is, the media did. And I think that it was... like I say, essentially harmless.
All right. Well, we are down to about the last minute or so.
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Well, that was Larry King. That was Larry King, Carl. I'll tell you what. Hang on the phone for just a moment, and I'll speak to you as soon as we get off the air.
Okay, fine.
All right. Hey, incidentally, thank you very much for being
on
the show. We'd like to have you come back. Do you think that's in the cards?
Oh, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Okay, super. All right, that's it for another week on UFOs Tonight. Next week, my guest is going to be Dr. Richard Boylan, who is going to be talking about his research in the abduction area. We are going to have, I think, a very fascinating program. Dr. Boylan has been involved in a national forum as far as abductions are going, and this is something you're not going to want to miss.